Howdy, Gamecock fans. It's Sunday, July 5th, the 5th of July, 2026, the year of our Lord, 2026. This is JC Sherbert with a coffee on break, I guess is what you would call this one since we're doing it in the morning. Wanted to kind of quickly talk to you guys about Nate Carson, the four-star offensive lineman from Irmo that committed to the Gamecocks on the 3rd of July. Had a nice little ceremony down in St. Matthews, South Carolina. Of course, that's the hometown of Alshon Jeffrey. And Zam Frederick, and a lot of great athletes have come out of Calhoun County. He plays at Irmo High School in Columbia. The Gamecocks beat some significant competition on him. Georgia, Clemson, Tennessee, Alabama was in the mix on him for a while. That was the word we got way early was Alabama was out in front, but it was an interesting recruitment. And so I'll go back and kind of quickly review that. So with Nate, with Josh Dobson, I was talking the other day that, the whole time it was like Carolina and dot, dot, dot. And it changed, Tennessee, LSU, you had Texas A&M, you had Michigan and Auburn at the end. There's kind of like a revolving door of the other team. With Nate, it wasn't really that way. It was really more of a come from behind in some ways type of deal for the Gamecocks. I think he really did generally have other schools at the top of his board for a while during this process, based on intel and things, all that good stuff that you find out behind the scenes. About mid-May, Rob Williams from Four Quarter Friday passed along to me after being at Irmo one day that, and this surprised me because the reports and everything you heard out there was that it was Clemson and Tennessee for Nate Carson. He ended up not even visiting Tennessee. And, it seemed like an uphill battle. Like with a lot of in-state kids this year, over at Irmo, you had Jaden Bryant who already had committed to LSU and then flipped to Miami. He seemed determined to go out of state. And you just didn't know about Nate Carson, right? So I got a call from Rob one day. I remember I was driving around, taking my wife someplace. And we talked about this and he said that, hey, Nate Carson, South Carolina, Tennessee are tied. This was mid-May. And I was like, well, that's a good sign. And so then, I kind of talked to some other folks, and it was their belief that Nate Carson in the end would be at South Carolina. And that was pretty good intel. So at that point, I got pretty confident. But then, you look at it, and he visits a lot of different places. He visited Clemson at the end of May, and the Tigers, I believe, were definitely the leader. I don't think he was ready to commit to them at that point. And things kind of went the other direction with him on that one, or with them on that one, with that courtship, so to speak. But I do believe the Tigers were up there. Clemson sometimes falls off on in-state guys. Like they did with Trey Sagara this year because they'll just move on and go and try to get somebody else. They don't really try to. I don't want to say they don't necessarily fight the battles, but they'll just move on, in many cases. And I think with Trey, that's kind of they just kind of fell off. They were strong with him for a while, but with this one, you have to ask Trey Sagara with, and Clemson was up there for him for a while, but you have to ask, with two parents that went to South Carolina in the mix, that kind of thing, the SEC, the I don't want to say the money because Clemson's got money to spend on high school talent, but they kind of fell off. But you have to wonder how realistic that is. I think Clemson had a realistic shot at Nate Carson's what I'm trying to say. I mean, he visited Clemson six times. Carolina eight was the only other school that got more visits. Carolina's right down the road, so you follow the visits, as they say in this business. And I think Clemson was a definite threat. I think he could have easily ended up playing for Matt Luke in Tiger Town. But as things go, that didn't happen. Georgia entered the chat. Kirby Smart and his staff do a great job of high school recruiting. And Georgia there at the end was thought to be up there and kind of trending with him following his visit. The Bulldogs do, they'd already gotten one offensive lineman from in the state, Ty Johnson from down at Wando, who is a Bulldog legacy. And so, yeah, you're wondering if they're going to get two offensive linemen out of South Carolina this cycle. And I always say, Clemson's going to get their share. Georgia's going to get their share. Georgia's share in this is maybe about one every three cycles. Or, if you keep them at bay, you don't want Georgia having two or three starters from South Carolina. Although they did have some Monroe Freeling, Xavier McLeod were both from South Carolina. Tyrann Ingram Dawkins was from South Carolina. So they do get some good ones. But you just don't want that to happen in bulk if you're the Gamecocks. If South Carolina has four or five starters from Georgia, obviously Georgia's a much bigger state and has many more prospects to choose from. But you got resource scarcity in some ways compared when you compare the two states. So you don't want Georgia coming and taking yours. They're going to. They're too close and too good of a program to not. And there's too many, like with Ty Johnson, there's resources. I mean, I'm sorry, there's connections there. There's going to be dogs in South Carolina. You cannot avoid it. Like with Monroe Freeling a few years back, he was a move-in and family didn't have many connections to the state. So Georgia's right. It's kind of close to home without being close to home. It paid off well. He was a first round draft pick at the from the University of Georgia. So out of the state of South Carolina. So they're gonna point is they're gonna get theirs. You just don't want to, two. Yeah, you kind of get a little nervous about that. It wouldn't have surprised me because, like I said, I've said many times that the headwinds that this staff was facing are still there. They're still in existence, but they've overcome them. So how about that? That's pretty impressive. But you didn't know, Georgia was kind of didn't know. Georgia obviously speaks for itself with how they develop players and all that good stuff. But the Colorado visit, and Colorado did this with Shedd Surratt when he came out of Gaffney, and Vakari Swain. What Colorado will do to pluck kids out of the South sometimes is they'll make a bigger NIL offer, like a money thing. And try to tantalize them out that way. Don't get me wrong. It's not like you're recruiting to Afghanistan in Boulder, Colorado. There are a lot worse places to be from a scenic beauty standpoint. I mean, I've been there. It's fantastic. You're out there in June and you look up and you see the Rockies and the snow and it's about 70 degrees and a gentle breeze is blowing off the mountains. Boulder is a decent place, and they got some football tradition. And obviously, Deion Sanders is the head coach out there, brings a lot of attention to that program. So it's not like it's, you're paying a guy to come to some horrible place. You're just paying him to go all the way across the country to the greater Denver area. And so they kind of were a factor. Then that last visit weekend, which I can't say enough about the job everyone involved did with that last visit weekend with these key prospects on campus who ultimately have committed to the Gamecocks. He came in, fantastic visit. I was actually at Hall's Chop House in Columbia when the visitors kind of walked in and quickly went to the private dining room. Shout out to Hall's, another great experience there. For our annual pre-wing off dinner. And so and like everybody was having a good time. That's my point. And Nate, I think that visit did it. I think it just made more sense. I do think that there were times where he was definitely heading elsewhere. I mean, from my standpoint with the intel, tracking the intel and the visits and all that, I felt pretty confident from the time Texas A&M got the crystal ball or the Rivals recruiting prediction machine pick for A&M on Josh Dobson. I felt confident about him based on what I was told for a while. I just kind of thought, well, they'll weather the storm and the NIL factor and all that with him. I can't say I felt the same way about Nate Carson until mid-May on I thought it. I don't know that I trusted it. But that visit weekend nailed it down. And so he is staying close to home and playing for the Gamecocks. You read anything out there about, and Pete Nakos from On3 had a good article. The offensive line recruiting in this cycle nationally has gone haywire a little bit because there's in personnel, general managers, personnel people in college football have been quoted anonymously as saying they're just getting a lot of good ones. Maxwell Hiller, who the Gamecocks were in on before the switchover to from Lonnie Teasley to now Randy Clements and Jason Smith, and the Gamecocks led for him for a while out of Pennsylvania. He's the number three overall prospect in America. Now, do I think he's an elite offensive line talent? Yes. Have there been offensive tackles in the past that I've watched and probably would rank higher, apples to apples comparison than Maxwell Hiller? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's a no-brainer, but number three in the country? I don't know. I don't know about that. But that's a sign that, maybe this class isn't as deep. And it kind of tracks with everybody needing an offensive lineman out of the portal. Urban Meyer's comments about there being an offensive line shortage as it relates to Ohio State. I thought The Athletic did an article one time that I didn't necessarily agree with because it was skewed as to, well, Ohio State and Georgia aren't 15 deep on the offensive line. Ergo, something's wrong. And I'm like, well, no, the kids are getting in the portal and all that. So they can go play. Offensive linemen want to play like everybody else. So I didn't necessarily agree with the premise of the article, but the overall fact is offensive line recruiting is getting harder. Again, resource scarcity. So if you're the Gamecocks and you need to sign five, you got to be resourceful, which I think they were with a guy like James Ross. I think Will Edencott. Jackson Austin kind of fit that. I think Clayton Lee certainly got some upside. James Ross, especially from Ridgeview, fits into that resourceful, I guess, category bucket, whatever you want to call it. But Nate Carson's a no-brainer, and you always need a certain amount of no-brainers, right? Even on the offensive line, where it's a crapshoot, and again, if you sign five and three work out, that's a good cycle. But you want to sign five every cycle. It's sure nice to get a guy like Nate Carson in the boat. And let me tell you why. So, the MO of this, the transfer portal class, which was eight this past cycle, and this is since Randy Clements arrived. And they had to really redo the room. A lot of outbound portal, a lot for good reasons, and then a lot of inbound portal. And then you got to replenish your numbers. Any way you can. I mean, during the summer, they took Vincent Chin and they took Neff Jiwa. Those guys, Neff's going to take a while. Chin has developed into a player that has a chance, maybe in 2027, could provide depth this year at tackle. But the Gamecocks, I don't want to say scrambling, but they're being very resourceful with this room. But the one common thread with everyone, I've said this before, is they all kind of play with an edge. Beamer said this about the portal class. They play with an edge. Kendall Briles said it in the spring. Give me the five baddest dudes you possibly can and put them up on the O line. So there's an emphasis on toughness, playing with an edge, and all that. And the four guys prior to Carson, that all comes out on film. Nate, it comes out on film as well. I call him Nasty Nate because he plays a little nasty, just to be honest. I mean, the guy's like, 6'4", 6'5", 290, built lean, has the frame to fill out, long-armed. When he gets his hands on you, if he can make contact, he's got what I call a violent punch. It's helpful for pancake blocks when you see a big offensive lineman. And sometimes in high school, just to be honest, you have guys that you go against that maybe you're 210 at DN, and you just knock them around. But on his tape, he's going against Julian Walker, and blocked him pretty good. He had the feet, and that's those are the types of players that he will be facing in the SEC. I think he can be a tackle. He's listed as an interior, but like everyone else in the class, there's some position versatility there. So those are the two common traits with all five of these guys, is that you could see them at different positions. Now, Kendall Briles, in the history of his offense, they have certain size parameters where they like, like their right guard's always different than their left. The right guard's a little heavier, left guard's a little more athletic, that kind of thing. Shout out to Jamie Bradford for putting that research together. But, you sort of look at it and you could see Nate Carson playing tackle. You could also see him inside. And so I like that about him as well. I think that those factors to me, make him, and he's the highest rank, so it's kind of a Captain Obvious statement here, but sometimes, like I said, I like James Ross better than the other three, and he's not ranked as high, the kid from Ridgeview. But I think he's definitely the top offensive line prospect as far as floor and ceiling in this class that the Gamecocks have signed, and then that gives them five. They're probably done there. Unless they flip somebody really good, a no-brainer. You don't turn down or obviously I just talked about an alleged offensive line shortage. So you don't turn down a no-brainer there. But that was a big recruiting win. The two guys in the secondary, obviously Josh Dobson's a five-star and he's been on the radar for so long and it just Gamecock Nation had to feel good about that one. And then Davion Jones was unexpected in some ways at the beginning of the week. And he comes to Carolina and he's a hell of a player. But this Nate Carson pickup's big too. You absolutely, when you have a guy like this out of Irmo High School that your rivals want and the rest of the SEC wants and the rest of the country wants, if you can get him in the boat, you need to headwinds aside. And the Gamecock staff certainly did that. Sam Sirbay, who is the director of recruiting for offense on Darren Usher's staff, the personnel staff? He continues to do a fantastic job. And it was another group effort. Everybody from Darren to Shane Beamer to Randy Clements and Jason Smith. I mean, the staff has really done a fantastic job of overcoming some of those headwinds. And, he hadn't bat a thousand, and they've lost some that they probably would have had otherwise. But if you're planning on, if you're the Gamecocks, getting what you can in the boat and then having a good season and trying to flip, get into flip season, then the more you get in the boat now, the better, right? And so I think that's a fantastic get for the Gamecocks. I really, really like Nate Carson as a prospect. I've always kind of from the time I watched his film the first time, thought, I kind of got what he was all about. And on that team, a lot of people are going to talk about Jaden Bryant because he's a five star and all that. But Nate Carson's a really, really good player, and has a bright future at South Carolina. Position versatility, he plays with nastiness. Fits the MO as the oft-discussed offensive line continues to, both as far as the future and the present be discussed quite a bit. When we get to the day where we're not talking about the offensive line as much, that means they're, unfortunately for them, that means they're better and not a problem. That's the life of an offensive lineman. You like my dad said, you get to sit in the locker room and count your money, but you also don't really get any credit when you do good things. It's all the quarterback or the receiver or the running back and all that. So I think that's really fantastic that you can get this guy in the boat. I will say this in closing, real quick. With offensive linemen, you got to project out years, and when you sign five in a class, you're not going to have that same five is not going to be like your starting five when you get down the road a bit. But if you look. So in the last cycle, you got Zion Giles, Darius Gray. Let's assume in 2 or 3 years, Neff Jiwa takes his athleticism and raw ability and becomes a baller. That's a dude. If he does it, long way to go, but in time, like 2028, I hate to say that. And then you've got Nate Carson and James Ross coming behind them. It kind of starts to look pretty good. Then take your pick of whoever else. But you sort of look at it and, offensive line again, kind of the mark where you want to start seeing them play and play well would be year three. And so there's no more freshman, sophomore, junior. I think people will probably still say it for a while, but with the new eligibility rules, it's just year one, year two, year three. I guess if somebody had a medical, they would just remain on med. I don't really know how we're going to structure that from a reporting standpoint, but yeah. So, Zion had a really good spring. Anthony Baxter's in that mix too. Big old kid from South Point, really had a pretty decent spring as well. These are all young guys, so it's going to be a little bit, but Neff, obviously all the potential in the world, and this is the last cycle of 2026 and 27. You throw these five, and you've got Nate Carson and then Ross. I think eventually I could see him being a starter here. I'll just be honest. Austin Edencott's a guy, and then Clayton Lee. So you've got, when you combine the two classes, you've got kind of what are the makings of a future group there. And then we should look at recruiting more that way too, because I don't think I ever remember a time where they a school, and there probably is one. I just haven't looked it up. And that would be hours worth of research, even with the assistance of AI, to kind of dig that up and go through all these college football rosters. I'm sure it's happened at some point where you have five guys you recruited out of one class. Probably back in the 80s and 90s, I don't think that'd be realistic. And then they become the starting five. It may happen at Carolina. I'm just not aware of it. But usually it's a mix of, Class A, Class B, some Class C in the starting lineup. So, especially now with the transfer portal, I mean, you're probably never going to see that. So I think it's good to look at things over the course of two classes, three classes sometimes, and project out. All right, Nate Carson is in, got in Friday. And Gamecocks got another one too on July 4th. Hope everyone had a wonderful and happy 4th of July. It's kind of nice to have Sunday to chill out, right? After if you've been to a barbecue and goodness gracious, I think all the neighbors where I live, I think they were saving up. I think they blew right through the Memorial Day fireworks and shot them all off last night. My dog is thrilled about that. It kind of got to me after an hour or two last night. Plus, it kind of rained. I don't know. Anyway, it's JC Sherbert. Coffee during break, the big Spur special, whatever you want to call it. We're bringing it to you. Talk to you soon. Holla.